welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Elektra Folk Sampler on Elektra Records, catalog number SMP2 from 1956.
So this album comes from my mother, who suggested this particular album for the show. And apparently this is one of her favorite albums growing up, and in fact, I guess, so much so that she really wore out her copy of it, but fortunately had a second copy that she lent us for this recording. And in fact, I guess she also performed one of the songs on this album, Mangweni Mpulele, which is a Zulu song, in I guess third and fourth grade. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this album cover, Flissy?
Sure. So this has a very cheerful cover with folk festivals spelled out in colorful letters and the featured artist listed in the bottom. And then on the top, it says Your Best Buy in Folk Music, a sampler record. And then on the back, again, it says the Elektra Folk Sampler. Oh, and I should mention on the cover, it says Folk Festival, a sampler record. And then on the back, it's Elektra Folk Sampler. And I guess that's the title of the album officially. So if you're looking it up on Discogs, it's under Elektra Folk Sampler. And so on the back, it has some liner notes about the collection in general. And then it has for each track listing, it has the artist and the song name, of course. And it also has a little, like one or two sentence about the song and where it comes from.
And it has, I guess, the Elektra album it originally came from as well.
Yes, conveniently with the catalog number on it.
All right. Well, do we want to listen to your clip, Flissy?
Sure. So I picked out Sevillanas by Los Gitanillos de Cadiz, and that's the first track on side B.
All right, let's take a listen. Okay, so what did you think?
So I picked out this song because of the percussion, and there's a lot of percussion in this track. There is the sounds of hand clapping, there's some sounds of some castanets and finger snapping, and you can also hear the sound of a dancer tapping, you know, those hard flamenco shoes on the floor. And I really like about this track that it is it was recorded on location in France. And so it really has captured that feeling of being maybe in, I don't know, maybe they were in a studio, but it sounds like that could have been in a cafe with the musicians like interacting with each other. And it sounds really intimate and very fresh. Like I feel like it feels very spontaneous. And I love all of those flamenco rhythms.
Yeah, so this is an interesting piece because, I guess, contrary to the rest of this album, I thought that where most of it had a very sort of subdued instrumentation and the voice is very prominent, this song was a little different in that, I guess, a lot of the rhythm instruments, like the castanets and the clapping and things, are a little bit more prominent and, you know, sort of presented more front and center than the actual singing itself. But yeah, it's interesting with the lots of sort of clacking of the castanets and also like the guitar accompaniment.
Yeah, definitely. And it is interesting that the voices kind of fall away a little bit in this track. They're even a little bit quieter. So in this collection of folk songs, there are folk songs from all over the place. And so a sevillana is a type of folk song and dance from Seville, Spain. And there's a heavy influence by flamenco. And there's both the sound of, you know, all those these complex rhythms that are going on created by the musicians. And then there's additional rhythms that are created by the dancer. And so it's all kind of playing off each other.
Yeah, it definitely has that flamenco sound, like you said, with like sort of like the heel stomping or whatever. And I guess it's Spanish language lyrics.
Right. And I tried to find some more about the Los Gitaninos de Cadiz, and I couldn't find anything else about that artist. It sounds like they are based in France. So they have songs and dances from Andalusia released in 1956 on Elektra. And it looks like maybe there are some other releases in France, but I couldn't really find any more biographical information about that group.
Yeah, definitely someone we'll have to keep an eye out for in future record shopping trips.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the song is called Sevillanas, and I think, like, to me, that seems like this, it sounds like it's kind of just a taste of that kind of song. If anybody recognizes this particular Sevillanas and can tell us about the, you know, the content of the song, please drop us an email or something.
All right. So what can you tell us about, I guess, Elektra Records?
Yeah. So I decided just to kind of take a look at Elektra, since this is a really eclectic collection of songs and artists on here. So Elektra Records was founded by Jack Holzman in 1950. And it sounds like he was, this would have been shortly after college that he just picked up and founded this label. He wasn't a super studious guy. His parents sent him to military school and he went to college, but he really wasn't interested in studies. But he did get really interested in the recording studio that was at the school and learning about music production. And the first album that he produced was he was listening to a concert nearby his college campus. It was a soprano singing in a church nearby, and he really liked her singing, and he decided to make a recording of it, and that's how he got started recording music. So it sounds like, you know, he really built this business from the ground up, and he did everything himself on really simple equipment. He eventually moved to New York, and he opened up a record shop in Greenwich Village, and that's where he connected with all these folk music artists and started recording artists in New York in the 1950s and 1960s. So a little bit later, like during the 1950s, his emphasis really was on folk music. And then in the 1960s, he started to bring in other artists, like in rock music. He signed on The Doors and Judy Collins and started to get a little bit more business by having these rock groups involved with Elektra. And so at that point, he negotiated a distribution deal with Warner. And then in 1960, sometime in the 1960s, he turned over much of the production stuff to his partner, Mark Abramson, and took over more of an executive and management role. So he really like started just as his own business, just him and a simple recording setup, to signing on some bigger bands. And then in 1974, he merged with Asylum Records, which is owned by David Geffen, one of the, you know, first and biggest of these like mogul music giant guys. And from then, it's been a bunch of mergers for Elektra. And if there is an Elektra again, it got bought and sold, handed over a whole bunch of times, but now Elektra is a label again. And in the meantime, Jack Holzman has now gone on to be like a big executive in the entertainment industry at various corporations. And he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2011 as like a producer. So Elektra was one of the very first labels to use these sampler albums. Now you can find them in abundance at your record store, any kind of sampler. And, you know, on CDs, too, there's lots of sampler kind of albums. And so the deal was that the artist would agree to have a certain number of songs on the sampler and not take royalties on those songs, because these sampler albums would boost their album sales. So you'd pay $1.25 for the album, and that's a low enough price for buyers to pick it up. And then also, you know, they might hear something on the sampler and be attracted to buy a full-length album from one of the artists. So it's not a budget label like some of the other labels that we have looked at on the podcast. It's just like this particular album is a budget album. And then on the back, I mentioned there's some liner notes, and the liner notes are by Nina Merrick. And Nina Merrick was Elektra's first employee and also Jack Holzman's wife.
All right. Well, do you want to listen to my clip?
Yeah, let's take a listen. What did you pick?
I picked the song Keys of Canterbury, and that is the eighth track on side B, and it is a sort of a collaboration between Gene Ritchie and Oscar Brand. So let's take a listen.
Madam, I will give to you the keys of Canterbury and all the bells of London town to ring and make you merry. If you will be my darling, my joy and my dear, if you will go a-walking with me anywhere.
Sir, I'll not accept from you the keys of Canterbury, though all the bells of London should ring and make us merry. And I'll not be your bride, your joy and your dear, and I'll not take a walk with you anywhere.
Madam, I will give to you a little ivory comb to fasten up your golden locks when I am not at home. If you will be my darling, my joy and my dear, if you will go a-walking with me anywhere.
Sir, I'll not accept from you a little ivory comb to fasten up my golden locks when you are not at home. And I'll not be your bride, your joy, nor your dear, and I'll not take a walk with you anywhere.
Okay, so what I really liked about this song is that, I don't know, to me, even though I guess, I don't know, maybe it is supposed to have like a slightly older feel to it, but this sounds sort of like a classic folk song to me. And I feel like the voices together sort of have a sort of a classic sound. And I like that it's a duet, but I guess while Oscar Brand is singing, it sort of has one style. And that while Gene Ritchie is singing, it sort of has a different style. And I like the instruments. I guess it's, I don't know, what, something like a lute and a dulcimer.
Sounds like it.
And it's kind of a, I don't know, kind of a weird song, I guess, about a guy trying to, I guess, sort of unsuccessfully court a lady through offering her gifts and, you know, not finding any success until he offers her his heart. Kind of a strange song. I don't know. What do you think about it, Felicity?
When I was first listening to it, I'm like, I mean, give up already. Like, she doesn't want your comb. She doesn't want her through these shoes. So, like, why do you keep bothering her?
Well, I guess.
And then also, I'm like, you don't even want to take a walk with this guy? Like, it's okay to turn down these gifts, but you don't want to take a walk with him?
You want to lead him on, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, and if she's like, I still don't even want to take a walk with you, it doesn't matter what gifties you bring me, I think he should have let it go.
I don't know. I feel like she's got standards. Like, you know, she wants it to be, she wants the relationship to be formed on the right reasons.
Yeah.
Know?
But then, you know, I did, when we were listening to this before we went on to record, I did go on a rant about this very topic. But then I was thinking about it and thinking about the way the song is arranged, where it's not just the lyrics, it's not just the story that's going on. Like, when the guy is singing, it's very earnest and sweet and plaintive. And then on the girl's part, She's like kind of joyfully blowing him off. Like, I'm like, oh, it's a tease. Like, she really wants him to come around and like say the right thing, but she's being like, she's playing
hard to get.
Yeah, she's playing a little hard to get.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's not my, I would say this would not
have been your pick.
It would not be my pick. I would probably not count it among my most favorite folk songs, but it does have its, it definitely is an interesting one.
Yeah, I guess you said you didn't really care for Gene Ritchie's voice.
No, it's a little bit whiny to me.
So I found her story really interesting. I guess she was born in a place called Viper, Kentucky in 1922. And I guess her family was very sort of involved in Appalachian traditions. And they were very sort of musical family. And together, you know, in their repertoire, they had 300 some songs that they performed. And I guess basically she gets, I guess she's credited with basically single-handedly saving many of these Appalachian folk songs from being forgotten through having sort of like a prolific memory of the songs that she performed with her family. And I guess she achieved some popularity in New York performing in coffee houses, and I guess was signed to Elektra, I guess, as, you know, Flissy mentioned, Jack Holtzman sort of had set up shop in Greenwich Village, and that's where he connected with artists. And so I guess she released 3 albums on Elektra. And then I guess later in her career, I guess she had her husband was a photographer, and they together, I guess, had this Green Haze recording label. And so I guess she re-released her albums later in life on her own record label. And I guess sort of had a stroke in the 90s and moved back to Kentucky, where she eventually died in 2015. So I don't know. I mean, I was definitely intrigued by her story, and I'm definitely going to have to listen to more of her stuff. I mean, her voice is a little bit unusual, but I think it sort of is effective for the kind of songs that she's singing.
Yeah, and I do agree with that, and especially hearing about her history as a resident of like deep Appalachia, which we're kind of neighboring to the Appalachian Mountains where we are. And, you know, if you could imagine like 100 years ago, that would be some really hard living.
Yeah, very rural, you know, and hard living.
Like very mountainous. And I can imagine the winters could be really brutal. And so if you're writing folk songs about life in that area where you don't have much, it's not going to be like really cheerful songs. It's going to be like a little bit like sad, and you know, a little bit of, I think that the struggle in will be, you'll be able to hear it in the voice of the songs.
Yeah.
So I
would say it's sort of like, you know, sort of, yeah, bittersweet. And
yeah,
it's, but I mean, it's interesting, like complemented with the dulcimer, which I guess she played. It's sort of, the dulcimer is, I guess, is sort of a cheerful sounding instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And Oscar Brand, I guess, is also a pretty interesting character. I guess he had a 70 plus year recording career, and during which he recorded over 90 albums. But I guess in particular, he was known for his collection of baldy songs. And we listened to a few.
They're dirty.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's like turn of the century dirty, which in some ways is like even worse. It's like just outright wrong.
So I guess you can find various sort of compilations of his baldy songs, but worth checking out, I guess. And I think he's got an interesting voice. I mean, I think it's interesting that, I don't know, I guess to me, it's like his voice doesn't really sound like he would be the type to sing baldy songs.
No, especially not in this song. Like, I feel like his singing voice is like so honest and sweet in this one. And then we listen to some other of his songs, and there's one about, like, there's a version of the Erie Canal that we listen to, and he's like, I guess the premise is that they're on this boat and they're approaching Buffalo or something, and he gets increasingly more drunk as the song goes and starts like slurring his words. It's just
very convincing.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's that he obviously has some facility with his voice that he's able to channel all different sorts of characters as he sings.
Yeah. So overall, I don't know. I mean, I really, really liked this album. I think it's fascinating that, like, as you mentioned, it's, you know, Jack Holzman had sort of simple equipment, but I think that that actually was an asset here because it sounds to me like each of the performances was recorded live. And so you really have a sort of a sense of the space that it was recorded in. And I think that the recording quality is quite excellent, actually.
Yeah, I agree. It is quite good.
And I know that, well, I mean, I've really enjoyed a lot of the songs. I had a really hard time picking a single song to, you know, to play on this. I really also enjoyed the version of Erie Canal that was on this album. And I know, you know, my mother, like I mentioned, it was one of her favorite albums. And, you know, she really liked the John Henry, the version of John Henry that's on this album. So it's, you know, it's full of really, really excellent songs. And I think it was effective because now I am interested to check out the individual albums that this sourced its material from.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to hear sort of the similarities among different folk songs. Like, folk music in a way has this universal appeal, like no matter where it's from. So there's songs in here from Israel and from Italy, as well as songs from the US. And so it's really, and they all have sort of that minimalist treatment that Steve is talking about. And like the quality of a folk song is, it has some simplicity to it, which I think makes it really appealing to children. Like, you know, Steve's mom grew up listening to this album, and I grew up listening to a lot of folk music when I was little. It's just like, you know, simple songs that have stories in them are just really, I think, delicious for young ears and can be enjoyed really by anyone anywhere.
Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, there's just, yeah, tons of interesting things on here. I like that, you know, like you mentioned, there's I guess Spanish language songs and Zulu songs and American songs, but they're all sort of given, I think, kind of the same treatment. And so it's sort of interesting to see, yeah, I guess just songs from all over the world performed sort of in a very similar style. And I guess one thing I thought was interesting, so looking at the, just to mention a couple of things in the songs that we didn't feature, one of the tracks, I guess it's the third track on side B, is this Crawdad song. And I hadn't heard that before, but I really liked that it was talking about the, I guess this one Crawdad that was the mayor of Crawdad Town who was strutting around.
I love that song.
And I guess the track after that was a French song. It sounded like maybe it was a Bals Musette genre piece. So it said on the back of the album sleeve that that was the only song on the album that was not a folk song. But that made me curious of like what constitutes folk songs versus not folk songs. Like, do you know what the definition of a folk song is?
No, I haven't even really considered it, really.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean,
it's an honorary folk song for this album, I guess.
But it sort of reminds me of, I guess, the arguments that people have about some bluegrass and, like, you know, I guess whether it's sort of jazz or folk. And like, I think that I was reading similar things about that too, about like what constitutes folk songs or whatever, whether it was like a song that was meant to be sung, you know, just like with a group of your friends,
mm-hmm.
or whether it was like music that was intended as like studio music
or like performed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess, I don't know. That's something to look,
yeah, I guess there's a good point to that. It was like thinking about, you know, within belly dance world, there are folk dances that are for purposes, you know, just for like celebrating at weddings or that have some spiritual significance or something, that have some traditional significance. And those dances can be boring if you just put them on stage. And so if you, you know, folk dancing and performance dancing are two separate things. If you're putting something on stage, you have to make it somehow more dramatic or more interesting. It's like being like folk dancing when you're doing it is awesome and fun, but it might not be like the most thrilling thing to watch. So maybe that's the same measure for folk music. It's intended to be non-performative.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only regret I have about this album is it says on the back, complete text included.
Yeah, we don't have that.
Unfortunately, the complete text was not included in our copy, but...
That's what happens when something floats around the world for 60 years before we get to it.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe the lyrics for these songs are available online now, so I'll have to look into
that. Yeah, certainly possible.
And I guess I understand there might be a volume 2 of this, like another, I guess, volume 2 sampler, so that'll be something that we have to... sort of
keep an eye out
for as well.
Yeah, in my search it seems like these samplers are not available as CD releases or streaming, although you can find the individual artists. That these samplers you're gonna have to track down on LP somewhere.
Yeah. All right, well, for more information you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/26. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Living in Hi-Fi. You can send us longer correspondence to feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, we have something a little bit different for my celebration of my birthday. And so stay tuned for that. So thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.